8. Knives in the back. Soldiers on the field. I seek not to use my grief as an excuse, but it is an explanation. People act strangely soon after encountering an unexpected loss. Though Jasna had been away for some time, her loss was unexpected. I, like many, assumed her to be immortal. From the Journal of Navani Kolin. Jessa Satch, 1174.
The familiar scraping of wood as a bridge slid into place. The stomping of feet in unison, first a flat sound on stone, then the ringing thump of boots on wood. The distant calls of scouts shouting back the all-clear. The sounds of a plateau run were familiar to Dalinar. Once he had craved these sounds. He'd been impatient between runs, longing for the chance to strike down Parshendi with his blade, to win wealth and recognition. That Dalinar had been seeking to cover up his shame. The shame of lying slumped in a drunken stupor while his brother fought an assassin. The setting of a plateau run was uniform. Bare, jagged rocks, mostly the same dull color as the stone surface they sat on, broken only by the occasional cluster of closed rock buds. Even those, as their name implied, could be mistaken for more rocks. There was nothing but more of the same from here where you stood, all the way out to the far horizon, and everything you'd brought with you, everything human, was dwarfed by the vastness of these endless fractured plains and deadly chasms. Over the years, this activity had become rote, marching beneath that white sun like molten steel, crossing gap after gap. Eventually, plateau runs had become less something to anticipate and more a dogged obligation. For Gavilar and Glory, yes, but mainly because they, and the enemy, were here. This was what you did. The sense of a plateau run were the sense of a great stillness. Baked stone, dried creme, long-traveled winds. Most recently, Dalinar was coming to detest plateau runs. They were a frivolity, a waste of life. They weren't about fulfilling the vengeance pact, but about greed. Many gem hearts appeared on the near plateaus, convenient to reach. Those didn't sate the Alethi. They had to reach farther, toward assaults that cost dearly. Ahead, High Prince Aladar's men fought on a plateau. They had arrived before Dalinar's army, and the conflict told a familiar story. Men against Parshendi, fighting in a sinuous line, each army trying to shove the other back. The humans could field far more men than the Parshendi, but the Parshendi could reach plateaus faster and secure them quickly. The scattered bodies of bridgemen on the staging plateau leading up to the chasm attested to the danger of charging an entrenched foe. Dalinar did not miss the dark expressions on his bodyguards' faces as they surveyed the dead. Aladar, like most of the other high princes, used Satius's philosophy on bridge runs. Quick, brutal assaults that treated manpower as an expendable resource. It hadn't always been this way. In the past, bridges had been carried by armored troops, but success bred imitation. The war camps needed a constant influx of cheap slaves to feed the monster. That meant a growing plague of slavers and bandits roaming the unclaimed hills, trading in flesh. Another thing I'll have to change, Dalinar thought. Aladar himself didn't fight, but had instead set up a command center on an adjacent plateau. Dalinar pointed toward the flapping banner, and one of his large mechanical bridges rolled into place. Pulled by chulls and full of gears, levers, and cams, the bridges protected the men who worked them. They were also very slow. Dalinar waited with self-disciplined patience as the workers ratcheted the bridge down, spanning the chasm between this plateau and the one where Aladar's banner flew. Once the bridge was in position and locked, his bodyguard, led by one of Captain Kaladin's dark-eyed officers, trotted onto it, spears to shoulders. Dalinar had promised Kaladin his men would not have to fight except to defend him. Once they were across, Dalinar kicked Gallant into motion to cross to Aladar's command plateau. Dalinar felt too light on the stallion's back, the lack of shard plate. In the many years since he'd obtained his suit, he'd never gone out onto a battlefield without it. Today, however, he didn't ride to battle, not truly. Behind him, Adolin's own personal banner flew, and he led the bulk of Dalinar's armies to assault the plateau where Aladar's men already fought. Dalinar didn't send any orders regarding how the assault should go. His son had been trained well, and he was ready to take battlefield command, with General Kahl at his side, of course, for advice. Yes, from now on, Adolin would lead the battles. Dalinar would change the world. He rode toward Aladar's command tent. This was the first plateau run following his proclamation requiring the armies to work together. The fact that Aladar had come as commanded and Rohaeon had not, even though the target plateau was closest to Rohaeon's war camp, was a victory unto itself. A small encouragement, but Dalinar would take what he could get. He found High Prince Aladar watching from a small pavilion set up on a secure raised part of this plateau overlooking the battlefield. A perfect location for a command post. Aladar was a shard-bearer, though he commonly lent his plate and blade to one of his officers during battles, preferring to lead tactically from behind the battle lines. A practiced shard-bearer could mentally command a blade to not dissolve when he let go of it, though in an emergency Aladar could summon it to himself, making it vanish from the hands of his officer in an eye-blink, then appear in his own hands 10 heartbeats later. Loaning a blade required a great deal of trust on both sides. Dalinar dismounted. His horse, Gallant, glared at the groom who tried to take him, and Dalinar patted the horse on the neck. "He'll be fine on his own, son," he said to the groom. Most common grooms didn't know what to do with one of the Rashadium anyway. Trailed by his bridgeman guards, Dalinar joined Aladar, who stood at the edge of the plateau, overseeing the battlefield ahead and just below. Slender and completely bald, the man had skin a darker tan than most Alethi. He stood with his hands behind his back, and wore a sharp traditional uniform with a skirt-like takama, though he wore a modern jacket above it, cut to match the takama. It was a style Dalinar had never seen before. Aladar also wore a thin mustache and a tuft of hair beneath his lip, again an unconventional choice. Aladar was powerful enough and renowned enough to make his own fashion, and he did so, often setting trends.
"Dalinar," Aladar said, nodding to him, "I thought you weren't going to fight on plateau runs any longer."
"I'm not," Dalinar said, nodding toward Adolin's banner. There, soldiers streamed across Dalinar's bridges to join the battle. The plateau was small enough that many of Aladar's men had to withdraw to make way, something they were obviously all too eager to do.
"You almost lost this day," Dalinar noted. "It is well that you had support."
Below, Dalinar's troops restored order to the battlefield and pushed against the Parshendi.
"Perhaps," Aladar said. "Yet in the past I was victorious in 1 out of 3 assaults. Having support will mean I win a few more, certainly, but will also cost 1/2 my earnings. Assuming the king even assigns me any, I'm not convinced that I'll be better off in the long run."
"But this way you'll lose fewer men," Dalinar said, "and the total winnings for the entire army will rise. The honor of the—"
"Don't talk to me about honor, Dalinar. I can't pay my soldiers with honor, and I can't use it to keep the other high princes from snapping at my neck. Your plan favors the weakest among us and undercuts the successful."
"Fine," Dalinar snapped. "Honor has no value to you. You will still obey, Aladar, because your king demands it. That is the only reason you need. You will do as told."
"Or," Aladar said,
"ask Yanev."
Aladar started as if slapped. 10 years back, High Prince Yanev had refused to accept the unification of Alethkar. At Gavilar's order, Satius had dueled the man, and killed him.
Threats? Aladar asked.
Yes. Dalinar turned to look the shorter man in the eyes. I'm done cajoling, Aladar. I'm done asking. When you disobey Elokar, you mock my brother and what he stood for. I will have a unified kingdom.
Amusing, Aladar said. Good of you to mention Gavilar, as he didn't bring the kingdom together with honor. He did it with knives in the back and soldiers on the field, cutting the heads off any who resisted. Are we back to that again, then? Such things don't sound much like the fine words of your precious book.
Dalinar ground his teeth, turning away to watch the battlefield. His first instinct was to tell Aladar he was an officer under Dalinar's command, and take the man to task for his tone. Treat him like a recruit in need of correction. But what if Aladar just ignored him? Would he force the man to obey? Dalinar didn't have the troops for it. He found himself annoyed, more at himself than at Aladar. He'd come on this plateau run not to fight, but to talk, to persuade. Navani was right. Dalinar needed more than brusque words and military commands to save this kingdom. He needed loyalty, not fear. But storms take him, how? What persuading he'd done in his life he'd accomplished with a sword in hand and a fist to the face. Gavilar had always been the one with the right words, the one who could make people listen. Dalinar had no business trying to be a politician.
Half the lads on that battlefield probably didn't think they had any business being soldiers at first, a part of him whispered. You don't have the luxury of being bad at this. Don't complain. Change.
The Parshendi are pushing too hard, Aladar said to his generals. They want to shove us off the plateau. Tell the men to give a little and let the Parshendi lose their advantage of footing. That will let us surround them.
The generals nodded, one calling out orders. Dalinar narrowed his eyes at the battlefield, reading it.
No, he said softly.
The general stopped giving orders. Aladar glanced at Dalinar.
The Parshendi are preparing to pull back, Dalinar said.
They certainly don't act like it.
They want some room to breathe, Dalinar said, reading the swirl of combat below. They nearly have the gem heart harvested. They will continue to push hard, but will break into a quick retreat around the chrysalis to buy time for the final harvesting. That's what you'll need to stop.
The Parshendi surged forward.
I took point on this run, Aladar said. By your own rules, I get final say over our tactics.
I observe only, Dalinar said. I'm not even commanding my own army today. You may choose your tactics, and I will not interfere.
Aladar considered, then cursed softly.
Assume Dalinar is correct. Prepare the men for a withdrawal by the Parshendi. Send a strike team forward to secure the chrysalis, which should be almost opened up.
The generals set up the new details, and messengers raced off for the tactical orders. Aladar and Dalinar watched, side by side, as the Parshendi shoved forward. That singing of theirs hovered over the battlefield. Then they pulled back, careful as always to respectfully step over the bodies of the dead. Ready for this, the human troops rushed after. Led by Adolin and Gleaming Plate, a strike force of fresh troops broke through the Parshendi line and reached the chrysalis. Other human troops poured through the gap they opened, shoving the Parshendi to the flanks, turning the Parshendi withdrawal into a tactical disaster. In minutes, the Parshendi had abandoned the plateau, jumping away and fleeing.
Damnation, Aladar said softly. I hate that you're so good at this.
Dalinar narrowed his eyes, noticing that some of the fleeing Parshendi stopped on a plateau a short distance from the battlefield. They lingered there, though much of their force continued on away. Dalinar waved for one of Aladar's servants to hand him a spyglass. Then he raised it, focusing on that group. A figure stood at the edge of the plateau up there. A figure in glistening armor.
The Parshendi Shardbearer, he thought. The one from the battle at the tower. He almost killed me.
Dalinar didn't remember much from that encounter. He'd been beaten near senseless toward the end of it. This Shardbearer hadn't participated in today's battle. Why? Surely with a Shardbearer they could have opened the chrysalis sooner. Dalinar felt a disturbing pit inside of him. This one fact, the watching Shardbearer, changed his understanding of the battle entirely. He thought he'd been able to read what was going on. Now it occurred to him that the enemy's tactics were more opaque than he'd assumed.
"Are some of them still out there?" Aladar asked. "Watching?"
Dalinar nodded, lowering his spyglass.
"Have they done that before in any battle you've fought?"
Dalinar shook his head. Aladar mulled for a moment, then gave orders for his men on the plateau to remain alert, with scouts posted to watch for a surprise return of the Parshendi.
"Thank you," Aladar added, grudgingly, turning to Dalinar. "Your advice proved helpful."
"You trusted me when it came to tactics," Dalinar said, turning to him. "Why not try trusting me in what is best for this kingdom?"
Aladar studied him. Behind, soldiers cheered their victory, and Adolin ripped the gem heart free from the chrysalis. Others fanned out to watch for a return attack, but none came.
"I wish I could, Dalinar," Aladar finally said. "But this isn't about you. It's about the other High Princes. Maybe I could trust you, but I'll never trust them. You're asking me to risk too much of myself. The others would do to me what Satius did to you on the tower."
"What if I can bring the others around? What if I can prove to you that they're worthy of trust? What if I can change the direction of this kingdom and this war? Will you follow me then?"
"No," Aladar said. "I'm sorry."
He turned away, calling for his horse. The trip back was miserable. They'd won the day, but Aladar kept his distance. How could Dalinar do so many things so right, yet still be unable to persuade men like Aladar? And what did it mean that the Parshendi were changing tactics on the battlefield, not committing their Shardbearer? Were they too afraid to lose their shards? When, at long last, Dalinar returned to his bunker in the war camps, after seeing to his men and sending a report to the king, he found an unexpected letter waiting for him. He sent for Nabani to read him the words. Dalinar stood, waiting in his private study, staring at the wall that had borne the strange glyphs. They had been sanded away, the scratches hidden, but the pale patch of stone whispered, 62 days. 62 days to come up with an answer. Well, now 60. Not much time to save a kingdom, to prepare for the worst. The Ardens would condemn the prophecy as a prank at best, or blasphemous at worst. To foretell the future was forbidden. It was of the Voidbringers. Even games of chance were suspect, for they incited men to look for the secrets of what was to come. He believed, anyway, for he suspected his own hand had written those words. Nabani arrived and looked over the letter, then started reading aloud. It turned out to be from an old friend who was going to arrive soon on the Shattered Plains, and who might provide a solution to Dalinar's problems.